property. You know, it's always been the bedrock of creating wealth.
Yeah.
It's stable, it's long-term, it's where you park serious capital.
It is.
But let's be honest, trying to get a piece of that is, it can be agonizing. It's famously illiquid. You can't just sell it tomorrow.
Not easily, no.
And it's bogged down in so much paperwork. For most people, it's just completely out of reach unless you're sitting on, what, six figures to invest.
At least. And that pain point, that huge barrier to entry, is exactly what we're digging into today. Real estate tokenization.
Right.
We're going to look at how this whole process tries to, you know, dismantle those barriers by turning property value into these small digital units.
And we have to draw a line in the sand on this right away. This is not crypto in the way people think of meme coins and volatility.
Absolutely not.
The sources we looked at all stress that this is about a compliant, regulated setup. The blockchain here isn't the asset. It's more like a method for secure record keeping and automation.
That distinction is everything. It's the only thing that makes this viable for serious investment and, crucially, for regulators. Investor protection comes from the legal structure underneath it all, not just the code.
And this is happening right now. It's incredibly timely.
It is. We're seeing large-scale adoption, with countries like Saudi Arabia actually formalizing the entire infrastructure for real estate tokenization as we speak.
So why Saudi Arabia specifically? I mean, it's a huge market, but why are they taking the lead on the formal regulations?
Well, it ties directly into their national strategy, Vision 2030. They're making a huge push to diversify the economy away from oil.
Okay, that makes sense.
So by formalizing tokenization, they hit two big goals. First, they cut down the administrative friction on their massive real estate projects. And second, they create a clear, compliant path for both local and international money to come into these fractional assets. It's a huge statement.
Okay, so let's unpack the mechanics of this. If you're splitting a property's value into tiny digital tokens, how is that actually legally enforceable? You said the legal structure is the foundation, not the code.
Yes. And what's fascinating is how they bridge the digital world with, you know, the centuries-old world of property law. The tokens themselves almost never own the building directly.
Right.
The physical asset, the building, is held by a separate legal entity. Usually it's called a special purpose vehicle or an SPV.
Wait a second. Isn't that just a modern version of a real estate syndicate? Those already exist. If the SPV owns the building, what is the blockchain layer really adding here? Is it just a fancy spreadsheet?
That's a great question. And it gets to the heart of the difference.
Yeah.
Think of the SPV as a secure legal box. It's a company created just for that one property, and it holds the actual title deed.
Okay.
Investors then buy fractional shares in that SPV, and those are the shares that get tokenized and recorded on the blockchain system.
Ah, so the breakdown is step one, the physical building. Step two, this legal box, the SPV, holds the deed. And step three, the tokens are just a digital record of who owns a piece of that box.
Exactly. And that's where the automation kicks in. Instead of a fund administrator manually reconciling who owns what and cutting checks, the system, supported by smart contracts, automates it.
So give me a concrete example. What does a smart contract actually do here in simple terms?
Okay, so imagine the net rental income hits the SPV's bank account on the 28th of the month.
Right.
A pre-coded smart contract can automatically trigger the distribution of those funds to every single token holder, calculate exactly to their percentage, maybe on the 29th. It removes human error.
Yeah.
It cuts the time from weeks to hours, and it creates a perfect audit trail.
Which makes the whole administrative side way more efficient, especially if you have thousands of small investors.
And that efficiency is what lowers the barrier to entry. Instead of needing $1 million, maybe you just need a few hundred to get exposure.
So that brings us to the investment itself. Our sources laid out this this pretty rigorous process, like a 13-step life cycle.
Yes, and we need to frame this for you, the listener. You have to assess this as a property investment first. The technology is just an efficiency layer on top.
Okay, so let's pull back the curtain on that process. What are the key stages that really matter for an investor? It has to start with the quality of the asset itself, right?
Yeah.
The sourcing and due diligence steps.
It has to. You need to be looking for proof of independent third-party checks. You know, structural surveys, environmental reports, clear info on who the tenants are. The yield assumptions have to be realistic. If the building is a dud, the technology is just a faster way to lose money.
And in the legal part, steps three and four, legal structuring and regulatory alignment. This is what decides what rights my token actually gives me.
This is the foundation of whether your claim is enforceable. The SPV documents have to clearly define that the tokens map to real enforceable economic rights. And you also look for something called asset segregation. Regulations often require the property to be held separately from the platform's own money, maybe by an independent trustee.
Yeah.
That protects you if the platform goes bankrupt.
I'm okay. That's critical.
If there's no clear regulator overseeing it, that is a huge red flag.
Then there's step five, token design. What kind of rules are we talking about being embedded there?
Token design sets the digital rules of the road. So it specifies how income is split, sure, but also things like transfer limits. For compliance, for KYC and AML reasons, many of these tokens are not freely tradable on a public crypto exchange.
Oh, that's a really important detail.
Yeah, they might only be tradable on a closed private market run by the platform. And that directly impacts your liquidity, which is a big risk we need to get to later.
Okay, and what about the less glamorous parts, the ongoing management that keeps the investment sound?
Excellent point. Step seven is property management selection. Sounds dull, but the quality of the management company decides your vacancy rates, your maintenance, your cash flow. If the platform picks a bad manager, your token's value is going to suffer.
And finally, step 11, which our sources call exit strategy structuring. You have to know how the deal ends before you even get in.
Absolutely. The exit strategy defines the life of the investment. Is the plan to sell the building in 5 years? 10. Is it an open-ended fund? The smart contract has to reflect whatever the legal requirement is to distribute the sale proceeds fairly.
So it all comes back to the same conclusion.
Yep.
This is property investing, just optimized with tech. The tech is secondary.
Correct. And that focus on transparent verification and cutting down administrative friction. That's why we see places like Saudi Arabia exploring how these systems could even modernize their national land registries one day.
Okay, this is where it gets really interesting for me. The money. If I buy one of these tokens, where do my returns actually come from?
Well, the good news is they come from the same two places they always have in real estate.
Okay.
First, you have rental income, or cash yield. That's the net income left after all the operational costs are paid. Second is capital growth, the profit you make when the building is eventually sold for more than you bought it for.
With so many small owners, are the costs like management fees and maintenance reserves, are they proportionally higher or lower than if one person owned it?
That's a good question. The administrative work is definitely more complex, but it's also more automated. You still have all the normal costs, management fees, insurance, vacancies. The big difference is that the platform handles all that complexity centrally and can spread the cost efficiently across thousands of token holders. So tracking and distributing the net income is just faster and more granular.
So let's really nail down this ownership model. We've said the token is not the title deed. If the SPV owns the building, what do I actually hold in my hand?
In a properly regulated setup, you're usually holding one of two things. First, it could be pure economic rights. That means you're legally entitled to your share of the income and the sale proceeds, but you have zero control over the property itself.
Okay, so I'm a passenger.
Exactly. Or, second, you might hold a beneficial interest in the SPV. And that's a much stronger claim. It grants you a defined fractional equity stake in the company that holds the title.
So the takeaway is the legal ownership is still all about local property law and the land registry. Tokenization is a legal layer that sits on top of that physical world, just defining who gets the money.
Precisely. And that's what you see with platforms like Gamma Assets. They offer fractional access for as little as 500 SAR, which totally democratizes access.
Right.
And their focus on Sharia compliance structures, you know, avoiding interest, ethical investing, that makes this whole model culturally relevant and accessible to a huge investor base in the MENA region that was previously underserved.
That low entry point is the headline for sure. But anytime something seems easier, we have to do a reality check. Tokenization doesn't eliminate risk. It just changes how you access it.
Which raises the big question, right? What are the unique pitfalls here? I think the first, and maybe the most counterintuitive risk, is that liquidity is not guaranteed. Yes, the token itself is easy to transfer digitally, but the asset underneath is still a big illiquid building. Just because a token exists doesn't magically create a market of buyers for it.
So even if I can technically transfer my token in a click, if nobody wants to buy a small piece of that specific office building in that specific city at that time, I'm still stuck.
You are still stuck. Secondary markets can be very thin. And if the platform only allows you to trade with other users on its own system, you're totally dependent on them attracting enough new investors who want your specific asset. That's a huge caveat.
Then you have the platform risk. You are putting a lot of faith in the issuer.
You're relying on them completely. For due diligence, for reporting, for distributing income on time, if that platform has operational problems, legal issues, or worst case, mismanages the property, you could face serious delays or even lose your capital.
So you have to check the platform's licensing, governance, all of that.
You have to. And you have to ask, if the platform fails, who takes over managing the legal structure of the SPV?
And of course, the basics of real estate volatility, they don't just disappear because there's a blockchain involved.
Not at all. Property fundamentals still apply. Tokenization offers you zero protection against the big real estate risks. Vacancies, surprise maintenance costs, interest rates going up, or just a down market cycle. If the local market tanks, your tokenized asset tanks with it.
You're buying the risk of the property, not the risk of the token.
That's the perfect way to say it. And finally, there's the risk of valuation and disclosure quality.
This seems to be a weak point in all kinds of fractional investing.
It is. The quality of disclosure is everything. You have to demand consistent, independently verified valuation reports. How often is the property valued? Quarterly. Annually. How? If a platform is slow to report rising maintenance costs or new vacancies, you're basically investing blind.
So, to pull it all together, tokenization is an innovation. It's about compliance, fractional access, and automation. It solves the access problem, but it introduces a reliance on the platform, and it definitely does not solve market risk.
And I'd say it's suitable for beginners only if they treat it as a property investment first and a tech play a distant second. The quality of the actual building and the strength of the legal structure matter so much more than the blockchain's efficiency.
Which brings us to the final takeaway for you, the listener. If you're looking into this space, you have to focus on the non-technical stuff. You should be asking for non-negotiable questions. First, what specific legally enforceable rights do I get as a token holder?
Second, how are all the fees structured and how is that net income calculation automated and distributed?
Third, what real secondary market or exit options actually exist? And finally, what specific regulatory body is providing oversight for this platform and this offering?
And maybe here's a thought to take with you for your next deep dive. If these blockchain-enabled systems really do succeed in reducing all this administrative friction, as regulators in the MENA region are hoping, what happens if that technology gets adopted not just by private platforms, but by the national land registries themselves? If every property title in the country were managed on a distributed ledger, how would that fundamentally change property law, transparency, and enforcement for everyone? It's something to think about as this all matures.